WGS on KMOX. Attorney Brad Young joins us as he does a couple times a week. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
Before we get into the law and politics, let's talk frozen confections. Nick Danberger on the stream says, anyone like Dilly Bars from DQ? Butterscotch was my go-to, and people judge me for it. This one caught my attention because just last night, Dave bought himself some Dilly Bars.
Ooh, did you get a whole pack?
I did.
Nice.
I'm rich. I bought a box. Mm-hmm. love me some Dilly Bars. Real quickly around the horn. What is your go-to order at DQ?
Well, I like the DQ food quite a bit, and lately I've been partial to the flamethrower burger. Delish.
You so live your life.
I like that with the fries, and then I'll get like a chocolate soft serve blizzard with like cookie dough is probably my like all-time fave.
Wheels, Buster, yeah, you're a Buster Bar guy, aren't you?
No. It's a blizzard with peanut butter cups and cookie dough. Ideally, chocolate ice cream.
His wealth
that sounds
is
awesome.
Staggering.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all of
he like, can have anything he wants.
$3.50, man. I'm rich.
Anything extra toppings? Sure. Nothing to Kevin.
Then he buys a box of Dilly Bars and throws them away.
I would not buy Dilly Bars, though.
What's wrong with Dilly Bars?
I've never been big on the chocolate-coated ice cream, things like that.
Okay, so I actually got a dip cone this weekend, but I got the Cinnamon Toast Crunch dip cone.
Oh, now that sounds great.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Brad, how about you?
Well, Ted Drew's is my go-to, but if I'm a DQ, I'm always getting those ice cream sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the kind where the chocolate
comes off on your fingers.
Comes off on your fingers.
Yeah.
And your fingers are coated in it. That's my go-to.
It's good eating. You know what? The cheaper the ice cream sandwich, the better for me. Like just a Go to Schnucks,
yes.
Store-bought, North Star, something like that. I love those things. Hmm. Okay.
Wait, we didn't get Andrew's order.
I gave him his chance.
Yeah, he's just too busy telling me I'm rich.
Yeah, he used it to go off on Wheeler.
Kevin interrupted when I started to say, that he doesn't like Dilly Bars.
Go ahead.
I like chicken strips. I get the chicken strip basket.
I like the toast that comes with that.
Because it comes with the toast.
And the gravy.
Yes. But also the M&M's Blizzard. You got to try the M&M's Blizzard.
That's good, yeah.
Because the M&M's Blizzard is almost like a swirl because the chocolate and candy coating will like rub off on the vanilla ice cream.
It's all colorful.
It's all colorful.
You really are a fast food sommelier.
Yeah.
And it has like a vanilla and chocolate kind of combined. It's almost like a
fragrant bouquet too. Mm-hmm. You know?
That kind of happens with the peanut butter cups, but I find it happens more with the chocolate rubs off. The chocolate holds the consistency better in the peanut butter cup.
You could talk about this till the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm prepared to.
Yeah. This is what with stuff we talk about in the office when we're just back there.
I'm more than prepared
to talk about
this.
Brad, speaking of being rich, let's start with the president of the United States making billions of dollars last year from crypto, $80 million from suing the media. And, of course, people are focusing on this, and it's the most corrupt administration there's ever been. And I couldn't wait to talk to you today because I don't like the guy. You know this. I do think he's corrupt. But he was already a billionaire, and if he's just making money, you know, he says he was interviewed today and he said everything he has is in a blind trust. He doesn't make any decisions. He doesn't talk to anybody. It was like a 950-page financial disclosure. Can you give me a little primer on when it's cool for the president to make money and when it's not?
Well, I think we can exemplify this issue with the following two situations. I don't think crypto is any problem because he doesn't have any control over how crypto goes up or down. His family owns it. In fact, he started his own meme Bitcoin, which in my view, I tend to fall along the lines of Warren Buffett, which is cryptocurrency. He wouldn't give you $20 for all the cryptocurrency in the world because it doesn't represent anything. I don't know that that's a problem. What I do think is a problem is, for example, the Trump children own a controlling interest in a Kyrgyzstan mineral mine that mines rare earth minerals that are used by the Defense Department. That I do think is problematic because they could use inside information to go out and buy interest in those companies that's not publicly available. And then when the government, particularly the Defense Department, issues contracts to get rare earth minerals that are necessary for the defense of our country, then at that point, they're utilizing inside information. So I don't have any problem with Bitcoin because it doesn't require inside information. But in the situation with Kyrgyzstan, rare earth minerals, that I do think either borders lines on behavior that I think really impacts everyone. I mean, look, Nancy Pelosi became an Uber millionaire because she had inside information. She would give it to her husband. Her husband would go out and buy stuff. So it's not a right or left. It's not a Trump derangement syndrome situation. It's the problem that when government officials have access to info that you and I don't have, they can use that to profit. That I have a problem with. Bitcoin, there's no inside information on that.
So question on the Bitcoin side, because that's a great point about how Congress does this and it's just out there and they're okay because they say that's okay. I saw, I don't know if you guys know the name Jeremy Grantham, but he's a British billionaire, was talking about crypto. And one of the points he made about crypto that he thinks it's like, he's got the Buffett approach, right? Like it's worthless. There's nothing behind it. But he also said it's great at one thing, and that is passing money around between criminals because it's untraceable and nobody can really follow the paperwork.
That's absolutely true. I had a client of mine, in 2023 that got hacked. And they hired me. They hired me to represent this company, and I was involved with negotiating through third-party intermediaries to give money via Bitcoin to people we didn't know where they were. I suspected they were in Bulgaria, but to pay off in order to unlock someone's server that got encrypted and locked up. It was ransomware. So yes, Bitcoin, and I use Bitcoin generically, cryptocurrency.
Right.
Cryptocurrency is the currency of criminals. That doesn't mean it can't be used for good.
But isn't that something we should be worried about with anybody who's elected? Like, because they're not supposed to take foreign money, for example, even if it's not criminals. But any elected official who's tied into anything like that, well, that's just untraceable. People can do what they want.
It is untraceable. And just because cash is also untraceable. But
it's just harder to move.
it is. You know, it is much harder to move. Bitcoin's much easier. I wouldn't be opposed to some sort of reporting regulations for elective officials when it comes to cryptocurrency, but simply amassing a fortune in cryptocurrency when people are, in my opinion, dumb enough to buy that type of cryptocurrency, and it makes someone extremely wealthy. I don't really think that's violating anything with regard to the public trust. I do think, though, when you're using that inside information to gather in wealth, that is a problem.
Brad Young with us for a couple of segments here, which is not enough time because we have so much to talk about. Let's talk about the Supreme Court this week, and let's start with the 5-4 decision on birthright citizenship. Your thoughts?
I thought this would have been a wider margin. The court ended up doing 6-3, and it affirmed this idea under the 14th Amendment that says, and it says specifically, that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that's the key phrase, are citizens. And historically, textually, by the exact words that are there, I think it applies to everyone. In fact, there was a Supreme Court case in the 1890s that validated this exact same ruling. The dissent focused on and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, stating that that people who come here illegally are not subject to the jurisdiction thereof, because that particular clause in the 14th Amendment was designed just to apply to slaves. It wasn't designed to apply to immigrants. So therein lies the issue. I think the court got it right. And I think that this is going to put this issue to rest. I don't see this coming back again.
So apropos of that, Brad, I spent 20 years on 97.1, and I don't remember ever really having this discussion. I didn't clock that this was a conservative talking point to get rid of the birthright citizenship until Donald Trump. But now, like, Mike Johnson's throwing up because it's so terrible, and Senator Eric Schmidt from Missouri is introducing legislation to try to bypass and just do it through Congress. You're a good conservative. Is this something you guys talk about?
It is. Yeah. Well, you know, with my conservative friends, it is. They disagree with me on this. But I call balls and strikes. And when I look at the wording, to me, it's all about the wording and what was meant by it. And if you look historically, what was meant by this is if you're born in this country, you are in this country. I saw a clip recently of Ronald Reagan talking about this particular clause and highlighting that unlike France, if you move to France, you're never going to be a Frenchman. If you move to Japan, you're never going to be Japanese. But if you're born in this country, you truly are an American. It's hard to say Ronald Reagan is a flaming liberal. So I tend to agree with Ronald Reagan. Okay, that's not hard to do for me. So this is a problem, but it's a problem I think that just like on the left, if you ask any mainstream Democrat if they have a problem with socialists, they're going to publicly tell you no, and privately after the second martini, they're going to say this is our MAGA. Okay, and I think the same is true with this birthright citizenship. You cannot publicly go out and say, "Oh yeah, I'm for." What's it called? Citizenship tourism, where people come here and have babies so they can be Americans. I am against that. And I think they got it wrong. But privately, you're going to say, hey, listen, the 14th Amendment says what it says. And it's hard to disagree with it.
We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back and we will cover the transgender sports issue. We'll take back up this issue of the resurgence of democratic socialism lately, especially in New York, but, you know, kind of all over the country. DGS, talking to attorney Brad Young. We have spoken about the birthright citizenship and the president's financial disclosure. Brad, your thoughts on the ruling upholding a state's right to say that biological males who are transitioning or have transitioned to female cannot compete in women's sports?
Well, I think from my perspective, they got it right. But let me kind of go through how they reach this decision very briefly. The main thrust of the argument here was under Title IX, whether or not it becomes discriminatory under the 14th Amendment. In other words, you're treating people differently. If you say as a state that if you have to align your sports affiliation to your birth gender, not to your chosen gender. And when you look at under the 14th Amendment, Dave, particularly under the equal classification kind of clause there, the court pointed out that they're treating everyone the same, that there's no difference. If you're born a female, whether you're born a male, you're being treated exactly the same. And so regardless of how you identify. And so it's also giving power under the 10th Amendment to the states to control things that is not specifically delegated to the federal government. So I think they got it right. The dissent pointed out that it's not exactly equal treatment, because if you identify as a different gender, then you're not being treated differently. And that really, I think, comes down to how you see gender. Is gender something that is what's called immutable, which means doesn't change? Or is it something that is under the control of the person? Today I'm a woman, tomorrow I'm a man. So that's really what the decision comes down to.
This is so unfair, because you could talk for hours about this. But a week or so ago, the president had a bunch of muckety mucks. One of them was that a-hole from Texas talking about church and state. And he was doing a whole thing like, don't you ever let anyone tell you that that's in the Constitution and it's unconstitutional. There is no separation between church and state. And I made a note like, I need to talk to Brad about this. And of course, I studied it in law school, but I was drunk a lot. So could you give us a little primer on your views on separation of church and state? Constitutionally,
as with all things, Dave, what you heard is partially true and partially false. There is correct. There is no separation of church and state in our Constitution. What our First Amendment says is that the government shall take no action to establish a religion. It doesn't say that they are to be separated. It says that they cannot establish. So let me give you the two extremes. I've represented groups and schools where they wanted to pray around the flag, students, and the school said, you can't do that. All right. That doesn't establish a religion if kids are praying around a flagpole. In fact, that violates the Equal Protection Clause. I've won every one of those that I've tried to that I've been hired to help out with.
Brent, let me stop you right there.
Yeah.
If the kids had been forced to do that, it would be the opposite, right?
Yes.
There you go.
That is the key.
Right.
So if you say every morning we're going to have a mandatory prayer time, that completely violates it because now you're taking a position that establishes that prayer time is required and mandatory. That's the key. And that's what schools so often get wrong. They think that because they wrongly believe there's a separation of church and state, that says we cannot mention in any way God or religion or anything. And that's just not true. But what also is not true is, and I think this is a problem in Texas, where they're going to be mandating starting in the 2030-2031 school year, mandating that students read Bible scripture. I think that's a problem. I'm a Christian. But the reason why that's a problem is that you're now establishing that as a religion. Now, one more point here. If that were in the context of saying we're going to have a religious studies class where we're studying Christianity, we're studying Judaism, we're studying Islam, then there's no problem with that. But when you isolate one, that does become a problem because of the mandatory nature of it.
Excellent. As everyone knows who pays attention and, you know, reads and watches television, democratic socialism is having a real moment. And I'm just curious what credence you give to that. Do you think that's the future of the Democrat Party? What do you think?
I think this is pretty well established, Dave, that when you look back in times of extreme, what's perceived to be chaos, right, then sometimes the extreme parties become more prevalent. For example, whenever there was an enormous growth in the size of government, you had perceived from the right problems with the government attacking the right, perceived, then you had the rise of the Tea Party movement. You had the rise of the MAGA movement. I think this, for the left, having the socialists come up, I think that's the equivalent, that they see that the world is in turmoil because of Donald Trump, and the current, what the far left would call moderate or mediocre Democrats, aren't getting the job done. So it's time to go harder to the left. And I think ultimately this is going to be an enormous problem for the Democrats in this country, because mainstream America is not going to embrace this. Even though you can win a primary, that doesn't mean you can win a general election. And so if this becomes more prevalent outside of the bluest of blue states, which is where we see it now, primarily New York and California, we also see it in Seattle and in Massachusetts, in Boston in particular. If you get outside of those areas and these progressive or really socialists, they call themselves socialists, if they start gaining traction in primaries, then that's really going to harm the Democrats at the ballot box.
Brad, I thought it was so interesting that Jack Schlossberg lost the primary.
Yes.
That I thought that was so telling because it's like we have the name recognition. He's part of this political family that people still love and feel connected to. He is pretty progressive, but the voters said, no, not this time.
Yeah, but you see, that's the thing. It wasn't just the voters, Rachel. It was the primary voters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And statistics show that only the hardest core individuals vote in primaries. And everyone kind of goes and votes, or not everyone, but more people go and vote when it comes to the general election. And that's the problem that you get into, is that when you have these extreme candidates on the right or the left that can win primaries, and I think we're seeing that right now. For example, in Texas, Ken Paxton made it through the primary in Texas. I don't know that he's going to win as a Republican in Texas because of his views. But the same is true with the progressive socialist left. And that presents a problem when you have to actually win a general election.
Awesome, Brad. Great job. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
Guys, DGS on KMOX 234. Ryan Wiggins from 97.1, who's a goofball, will be here at 3 p.m. I love Wiggins.
It's a great title.
He is. He's just a goofball. And then Ian Mackey and Dennis Hancock will be here at 4 for the think tank. We'll talk some more about democratic socialism. A lot of talk going on about it on the stream. You can always take part through
just
Facebook.
Just don't fight.
They can fight. As long as they're not fighting about us, I don't care.
Don't be jerks, you know?
Facebook or YouTube, and you can join the fray. Do a little DGS happy hour. Anyone want to lead off?
Well, I've got something here for you guys.
Do it.
Have you heard of the 2026 Florida Python Challenge?
No.
Ooh. I bet you're getting
sounds
paid
like
to
something
hunt.
I should join.
Bet you're getting paid to hunt pythons.
Well, you could win a $10,000 prize.
Okay.
So you could win $10,000 if you remove the most pythons during a 10-day event in the Everglades. It's expected to draw about 1,000 snake hunters to South Florida this month. So you have to register, you have to complete an online training course, and the hunt begins just after midnight on July 10th and goes till 5 p.m. on July 19th.
No liability there.
Well,
but they have a real problem with, you know, those invasive species like that. Like, they're taking out alligators, they're taking out other indigenous species because they just eat so much and they grow so big and so fast in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Go hunt them snakes.
So this is kind of just mostly a fun thing because they did a geological survey, and a short-term public hunt like this is not actually a realistic way to get rid of the species. But I'm thinking if you're going to do this, you either really need $10,000 or it sounds fun to you. So
right. It's something you might do anyway because you know,
one of the scariest things to me is being in water and stepping on like a giant snake. Maybe the worst thing I can imagine, and God love the people who do it, but when someone drowns like in a pond and the divers go out there and they have to feel around for that person's body, God love them, but that, oof.
Those seem like two distinctly different things.
Well, I mean, walking in water, I can't see through, and stepping on something scary.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
That have you stepped
bad.
On a snake before?
I
don't know. I don't think I have.
It's not a common thing around here.
One time when I was at my cousin's house, the same one where I pooped my drawers and the dog brought it back, there was what looked like a black snake, maybe 6 feet long, in the yard. And me and my two cousins were pretending it was a snake and, you know, shooting it with fake guns and stuff. And so I went up to it and hit it on what would be its head with my little fake gun. And it was a real snake.
Welp.
Yeah. Like maybe I pooped my drawers twice that time.
I mean, like, you, Dave is like,
ugh. And then my Uncle Ernie just took its head off with a hoe.
Yeah.
Done.
No playing around.
Uncle Ernie.
He's yeah.
And his hoe.
Yeah, it's probably good to know if it's a good snake or a bad snake before you do that, because some of them will keep critters away from your house.
Oh, I'm sure it was a good snake.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a cobra.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, the poisonous ones, all right, well, those are dangerous, but the other ones, they're fine.
But it scared me.
Yeah, I bet.
Wheels, what do you got?
All right, so I've been looking at this for a bit because I saw people do a video about it, and I thought there's no way this is real. But they went through and they listed, they were talking about the cost of going to Disney World, right? This is like supposed to be the most magical place on earth, a place where families go and spend their time. And they were talking about all of the things you can do that cost less than taking your family to Disney for a week. Right. So if you guys had to guess, what do you think the range is for just a moderate trip? Right. You're not staying luxury and you're not going super cheap. Just kind of a middle of the road week at Disney with hotel and all of that. What do you think that is roughly? A
couple grand.
Yeah, it's like $12,000.
Oh, man, I was going to guess like six.
It's $10,000 to $12,000. And they went through all of these things that you could do with a family of four for less than that. Like, you could spend a week in Japan. You could spend a week in almost any country in Europe. You could go on a safari in Africa. You could go all of these places. When people complain nonstop about the cost of what it is to go to a ball game or to go to a sporting event, how come we don't have the same complaints about Disney?
I don't know.
Because
this is like, it's insane that a moderate trip to a place like that for a week is $10,000 to $12,000. That's insane.
Yeah, but if they charged less, it would be overrun, right?
I don't know. I guess it's possible.
Because they're not hurting for people to attend Disney.
Well, no, I don't.
This is
I know
what people
that they,
are willing
I know
to pick.
For a few years they've been worrying that their numbers are down, and I wonder if their numbers are partly down because most people can't spend $10,000 to $12,000 on a week-long vacation.
I thought they had intentionally raised their prices because they wanted people with more money coming to Disney. Look, it doesn't make sense to me either. I will probably never go to Disney unless I have a child someday and that's like their greatest dream. Then sure, I'll look
into it. Well, the reality is too, almost nobody spends a week. Like, right. Normally you go for a few days.
But to some people, like, this is what they want to do and every penny is worth it. And it's like, you know what? More power to you. I'm sure I'm doing things that don't make any sense to you.
Are you weirded out by Disney adults or is it like, where would you dig?
Where would you dig? I mean, it's not for me, but like if you're going and having fun and it's your hard earned money. Am I really going to try to tell you how you're supposed to be spending it?
I think the worst people are the ones that judge Disney adults.
Yeah, like that one lady who was like, we should ban them from the park. Like, oh, okay, so Disney's not going to take their money because you mismanaged your time with your 3-year-old or whatever.
I don't understand the logic of crapping on people that enjoy something like that. I mean, how are sports fans any different?
Going to a Disney park is watching an eternal, like vampires versus werewolves.
it's the eternal battle.
Watching the 40-year-olds that have kids and the 40-year-olds that don't have kids, and they all just hate, each side just hates the other one so much, just ancestral foes.
Yeah, you know, the opposite.
Going to war.
The opposite of those people that hate the Disney adults who show up with no kids, the opposite of that are the people that say, stop bringing your kids everywhere. Why do you bring your kids everywhere? Well, if I don't bring my kids, I don't get to go anywhere. I mean, like, it's a world where all of us exist together. It's okay to bring kids. There was this big thing like, don't bring your kids to a restaurant that's also a brewery. That's for adults. Like, no, the restaurant allows families. And if it's a brewery, it's a brewery. Why can't I bring my kid if I want to go somewhere? Like, why? This Andrew's right. This weird battle between these two extreme factions of like nonsensical, illogical people is just baffling to me.
So you went to the opera?
I did go to the opera.
Oh, I forgot about purpose? This.
Yeah, well, I had to do my part in the war. I also went to war against the people that had children at the opera. The battleground is waged across America. No, I went to the opera on purpose. I was a young friend of the opera. I went as part of the Young Friends of the Opera, which is anyone under the age of 50, which I thought was very, very, it tickled me to no end.
Yeah, it's nice.
That the young friend, it was nice to be called young, you know.
What did you see?
I saw Pirates of Penzance.
Oh.
Which is a very, very silly, very, very funny.
Yeah, sure.
They knew what was funny back in 1890, I tell you what.
Can I ask a really good sense. Maybe an obvious, dumb question? Yes. Could you understand what they were saying?
Yeah, it was in English.
It was in English, okay.
That was Gilbert and Sullivan. That was written in England. Gilbert and Sullivan were a pair of British guys.
He's saying Gilbert and Sullivan like this.
Like we know who that is. Yeah.
I'm
wildly
like, oh, Gilbert
famous.
And Sullivan,
Gilbert
of course.
Gottfried and Ed Sullivan.
I know who they are.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah. Wildly famous people.
Oh, I'm sure they are. The opera. Anytime there's like an opera trivia question, I'm like, Madame Butterfly. That's the only name of one that I know.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is.
All I know about Gilbert and Sullivan is. People just say things like, well, that sounds very, very Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah, they
so
had
it always sounded like a knock.
No, they were extremely popular and successful.
I know. Yeah.
But anyway, to get off of them, they wrote this and they were English. So English is the native language of it. And I didn't find it hard to understand really at all. But they do at Opera St. Louis on the Webster campus. They have screens to either side of the stage.
Yeah.
That have the lyrics on them as they're singing them. So if you
could you enjoy the opera?
No. Wheels, you would have loved this.
No, I would not.
It was so funny.
I can't do it.
Also, I didn't know that we had this here. Like this was new. I'd never been to anything like this before. Like this was new to me, as it would be to you guys. And it was like it was really fun to see like a part of the city that I just didn't know.
Of course,
I love that stuff. I love seeing like parts of our community that I just had no idea existed, which is like a thriving group of people who love the opera and beautifully performed so well. I just didn't know we had people that could do stuff like that around here.
Was it like, was it the venue full? Like a lot of people there?
Totally sold out.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So this was the closing performance, I think of the opera season, which runs for a couple months in like the spring and early summer. And this was the closing performance for. They do like 5 different shows throughout the year, and I think this was the end of the season, and it was totally sold out. super packed house, and they had a buffet beforehand.
I was going to ask, how was the buffet?
Buffet was great. I had salmon cakes, and I had some sort of a chicken thing.
Hmm. Some sort of a chicken thing.
Open bar.
Nice.
Tied on a couple of pirate punches.
Oh, boy.
Which is just fruit punch with vines.
Now we know why you had fun.
I've seen you with punches.
Yeah, now we know why you had fun.
I remember when Rachel...
It's actually not a funny it's just opera
the, yeah,
at all.
It's just the
He's
punch.
He's just drunk.
Yeah, he actually saw Les Miserables.
He's back there, this is hilarious!
Hilarious! They're on the ship, and I'm like, pirates!
One of my favorite DGS things this year was when the guy, when Rach and Andrew went with me to Mardi Gras when I was the poobah. And Rachel took a hurricane out of Andrew's hand. She's just like, I think you're good.
I was doing just fine. Thank you very much. I did think it was an interesting choice, though, to have an hour and a half of open bar before like sending us into this theater
it's
to
risky.
Watch the opera.
See, now we know
That's
you. Now we know why you had fun, though.
I was like, this seems like a really dangerous thing.
Back DGS 250. Hey, Wheels, you want to see Rachel get mad?
Yes. Hey. I love Angry Grazer.
Hey, Rach.
What's up?
Taylor and Travis are building a whole ass castle inside the Madison Square Garden for their wedding.
That's what I heard. It's not my taste. It's not my taste. That's the nicest thing I could think to say. So that's what I'll say. It's not my taste.
Just their overall existence?
Just like the giant spectacle when you're already both so in the public eye, but then it's like, but this is our relationship.
Right.
And like, this is our special day for us. But we are going to hold it at Madison Square Garden and we're building a fairy tale princess castle.
It's a little much. On the nose.
I try not to be like, you're too old for that. But like, maybe a little too old for that.
You know, if I were as famous as rich and as rich as them, I probably wouldn't have any idea how much people hated me either. Right? Like you're so protected from it and you're constantly worshipped and photographed everywhere you go and people screaming your name. Like there's so many people out there who just are like, oh, my God.
Well, not to mention, like, your immediate inner circle is only ever going to tell you what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's just part of having, like, a role like that in a celebrity's
not
life.
Not mine. When I rolled out my health issues this morning, Andrew told me I was basically good as dead. So
clock's ticking, man.
He's not gassing me up.
I do kind of have a theory, though. Because, I mean, Taylor Swift is a billionaire. She could burn as much money as she would like on this situation. I do wonder if the Madison Square Garden thing is not going to happen at all, and it is just, like, a huge distraction. It very well could be. Or it could be, like, at the last minute, like, hey, here's the website. Buy your tickets to the watch party at Madison Square Garden. It's actually at a separate location, but we're, like, live streaming it to the big screens in
Maybe
there or
right.
something. It could be something like that.
I just love the whole dynamic, though. Like, famous people are like, please give us our privacy, but look at us! Look at everything we do! Because we want to show you, but then give us our privacy. Good luck.
New report says that some celebrity super fans are spending serious money to be buried next to their idols. One Marilyn Monroe fan paid $195,000 for a mausoleum crypt near her.
Why?
Why is it that you always hear about these people who are like super weird about stuff like that? How did they get their money?
Right.
Like, don't you ever see, like, weird people who are rich and it's like they don't even work? And it's like, where did all of your money come from? How did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious.
No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood were both shot at the same time right next to each other in Texas. And the smoke from There Will Be Blood wafted onto the No Country for Old Men set and caused it to be shut down for a couple of days.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Both pretty great movies.
Yeah, came out around the same time. I think we're both... same award season.
Love those movies.
They're both really good.
Couple of bad people in the news. Kate Gosselin Is she anything to you guys? Were you guys too young for Kate Plus Eight?
I did not watch Kate Plus Eight, but I remember her being in the tabloids all the time with John.
She's such a hateable person.
Both of them are.
And her son Colin is coming out with a new tell-all book, and she is getting ahead of it by saying he is mentally ill.
Oh.
And then Blake Lively. Blake, shut the F up. Do yourself a favor. The whole thing had kind of blown over, and okay, I'm not going to pay you anything, and Justin Baldoni, you're not going to pay me anything, and we're just going to go be billionaires. Now she's back at it saying she demands $8 million from him for her legal fees. This is such... Dude, people may have forgotten with time that you're such an a-hole, and you might have got cast in a movie, but now you're just bringing it all back up.
Oh, I feel bad because someone on the stream says they're starting to wish they had never come on the stream because the chat is BS politics. I promise
it's not normally like that.
This is an unusual
day. We have like three people that have taken over the stream and decided to conduct their own sideshow.
I never like to block people because of their political views.
No.
But we will block you if you just take over the stream.
Right, because we got people that want to participate in the show and not have a side conversation take over the stream.
Yeah, I've been enjoying reading it. I'm learning a lot about democratic socialism, but you have until 3, so you have 6 minutes left to bust each other. And Brian M's in on it, too, so it's really lively. But yeah, 3, where he's going to...
Brian M's contribution is Blake Lively just seems extra, and we're like, he's in the political mix now.
He's on it.
I think I have a solution, and the solution is the guy who's like, this chat's political. I'm just going to block him.
No, you can do that.
It's faster than blocking. It's faster than blocking all the other people.
Because he wants to do the right thing and participate in the show, and other people have decided to have their own show on our stream and take that away from the other people that want to comment.
I mean, yeah, but he said something earlier I didn't like either. I don't remember what it was, but he said something where I was like, keep it an eye on
it. None of it is a huge deal. I'm just saying this chat is not normal. It's not political arguments every day.
Never. Well, I shouldn't say never, but rarely.
Very rarely. This is a special circumstance we have going on. We thank you all for being here and listening to the DGS.
I haven't minded it that much. I thought it was kind of interesting.
I like that the chat's projected onto my face. I'm trying to figure out how I can make
it. I can move it if you don't want
to.
No.
I'm trying to figure out how to make it fun. I don't know how to...
Okay, well, maybe off the air we'll figure out how to make it fun.
Go to Sleep says, oh, don't let Brian act like he's the cool guy. Now I can't even see what the finish of that. There's so many...
Yeah, right. So there's another weird thing on our end of the stream where whenever we post a message
goes on
to the
four
chat,
different places.
It goes 4 times.
Yeah.